Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com.
And welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, CEO of the HR Analytics Dashboard Employee Cycle. And today we're going to talk about the future of HR and work. I know a lot of the times we're just talking about today, but let's talk about what do we think HR and work is going to look like in the future. So please help me welcome to the podcast, Mike Haberman, founder of Omega HR Solutions and chief consultant. Woo! Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Bruce. Happy to be here. Appreciate the invitation.
You know, you're a little HR famous, so I am very excited to have you on the podcast. This is awesome.
I always chuckle at, you know, I get the HR famous part, that always cracks me up. So it's even though I've heard that for a number of years now, it's like, really? So you... You always have that, you know, a different view of yourself than other people do. I was at a just a quick story. I was at the SHRM conference in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago, I think it was. And a guy by the name of Robert Treacher came up to me and he goes, "You're Mike Haberman. Oh, man, this is fantastic. You're one of my favorite people." And he says, "I'm having this little fanboy moment here." And it's like, and it just cracked me up. I've done the same thing with other people too, people that I follow. And it's, you know, the first opportunity to meet them is fantastic. And so I appreciated what he was saying, and I appreciate the sentiment that goes along with it. So it's kind of funny. Social media has been very good for a lot of people's reputations, and then as we have seen, social media has been bad for some people's reputation as well. So it's a different world.
Yes, it has for a lot of people. So because we've recognized that you have become HR famous, I have to ask you the question we always ask each guest, which is, how did you become HR famous, and how did you first start off in the HR space?
I've been around in HR for a long time. I'm probably coming up on 35, 40 years in human resources. I haven't made that calculation here recently, but I've had no intention of ever being in human resources. I was actually studying monkeys and chimpanzees, working on a PhD in comparative animal psychology, and ended up not completing that for a variety of reasons. And I actually went looking for work and went to an employment agency, and they're looking at my background going, "This is really different. We're not going to be able to sell this to anybody. How'd you like to go to work for us instead?" And so I started off in HR, actually working for an employment agency, dialing for dollars, calling companies out of the yellow pages, and pitching a secretarial candidate that I had that, you know, they had given me a resume of, and working on that, trying to get both her placed and also trying to get more what are called job orders, where people are saying, "Well, I don't need this, your secretary, but I do need this kind of person." And I did that for probably close to 2 years. and decided that I wanted to be on the other side of the desk as opposed to pitching people. I wanted to be the person that they were pitching to. And so I went on an interview and didn't get that job, but I decided, hey, I can sit here at home and do the dialing for dollars and find myself a job, and ended up with the help of another friend, ended up going to work for a manufacturing company as a personnel trainee. Ended up starting in Atlanta, moving to Chicago, took on a plant up there that had never had a human resources manager. In fact, we didn't call it human resources at that time. It was personnel. And it gave me some great experience. It was a unionized plant, so I got union experience. Came back, and my passion was actually for the recruiting effort. So I came back to headquarters and became the corporate recruiting manager. Went back to school to work on a master's degree in human resources. And when I got that, my boss gave me a nice little pat on the back and a promotion. And basically, I had nowhere else to go. So I got receptive to people calling me. And one day, I got a call from a software company and said, hey, would you like to come be our recruiter? And I did that, rode that rocket ship for about a year and a half. And then the company blew up, as things were wont to do in the 80s in software. And decided at that time that I could probably do HR better than what my bosses had been doing it. And so I, basically said, I'm going to hang up my own shingle. And I was in a neighborhood at that time where we were playing neighborhood tennis, and all my tennis partners were either business managers or business owners. And when they found out I was in HR, it got to be the old doctor story. Hey, doc, my elbow hurts. What do you think I ought to do? It was, in this particular case, it was, Mike, I've got this problem employee. How do you think I ought to handle that? And one of them finally said, you need to start a company that services small businesses that don't have HR people. And I said, well, that's a really good idea, but I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And then about 2 weeks later, the company blew up, and I went, okay, there's my sign. So here's my sign, and I have been self-employed since 1991, helping small businesses where the person that's handling HR is the accounting manager or the CFO or the office manager or the payroll clerk or the, in one case, the husband of the president of the company. And people don't want to make HR, those people don't want to make HR their career. Many of them don't like it. And so I go in and work with them and get them straightened out and help them continue to be compliant with all the stuff that they have to be compliant of. I'm trying to keep them out of trouble. So that's what I've made almost a 25-year career out of in consulting. Or what is it now? 91 to 2018. So I'm talking, what? How many years is it? 27?
So I've been there. We go. There we go. Quick math.
That's right. Who says HR people aren't good at math?
So, there we go.
So, I've been doing that ever since. And what has, led me to the topic that we're going to talk about today is a long time ago, I started writing blogs. I've been writing my blog for coming up on 13 years. And about 9 years ago, I started asking people, are you paying attention to what's, all this future stuff that's supposed to be paying attention to? How are you preparing for it? And I have found that most HR people aren't ready for the future. They pay attention to what happened yesterday as opposed to what's going to happen tomorrow and certainly what's going to happen in a year or two. So I started writing and dedicating one of my blog posts, because I post 5 times a week on my blog. And I turn Friday into what I call Future Friday, where I address some issue that I think HR people need to be aware of so that when it arrives, they're prepared for it. And so in that Future Friday, I've talked about artificial intelligence. I've talked about the importance of strategic planning. I've talked about how the nature of work is going to change and how the world is changing and different at that time, 9 years ago, we were talking a lot more about the millennials and how that was going to change the workplace and how people needed to be prepared for it. Because every article I was reading was saying this is going to occur in the year, you know, 2018 or 2020. And I'm started thinking, you know, that's a mere 3 years away, or that's a mere 5 years away. And it's going to be here sooner than we know. And if we're not prepared to deal with it, we're still then playing catch up like HR has done throughout its history. We play catch up. We deal with what happened yesterday. And I didn't want that to happen to people. Now, I can't change the way people do things, but I can write about it and talk about what they need to be prepared to take a look at. I've gone and have done a couple national presentations on becoming a practical HR futurist. Mm-hmm. And I give tips to people about how they can go through and take a look at their industry, take a look at their company, and start making some preparations. Everybody always talks about the importance of strategic planning, and much of that is given in terms of being prepared for different eventualities. You prepare different scenarios, and that's just what I wanted to do, is to give people the opportunity and the information where they could potentially prepare different scenarios. It may never come to happen in their particular industry or their particular job or their particular company. But if it does, at least you have thought about it. You're prepared to deal with it in a much better situation than what than if you hadn't thought about it at all. So I think it's just important for people to prepare those scenarios. So that's why I started doing it. So,
got it. Great. That was an awesome background. So before we start talking about the future, where is HR in work today? And let's set a foundation for where we believe it is today. And then we can go into where do we think HR and work is going in the future?
Well, I think we've seen actually a divide in HR today, and actually several divides in HR today, with technology and size of companies and preparedness. Some big companies are very much prepared for some of the things that are going to occur in the future. There are more and more writers out there and speakers out there talking about the future than there were 9 years ago. Some of them have made very big names for themselves, and some of them, some of us have made much smaller names for ourselves. But there are, you read about Silicon Valley and HR out there, and actually not so much HR as the preparedness that those companies have for the future. So they're talking about artificial intelligence. They're trying to incorporate that into their day-to-day kinds of processes that they have. More and more people are talking about the importance of the employee experience and are incorporating things like artificial intelligence into that experience for the recruit and for the new employee. And so I see bigger companies doing that kind of stuff. And, companies of 10,000 employees and 20,000 employees are probably a little bit more aware of that. They got into technology much earlier than a lot of other companies, just because just the necessity of their size required them to be much more automated. I mean, I remember going back to the days where we were all paper and pen and typewriter systems. And, your human resource information system was your file cabinet. And not particularly useful, but it stored paper real well, but it wasn't anything that you could search through with any great deal of ease. So as we started automating, bigger companies picked that kind of up. There are still a lot of small companies out there, though, a lot of HR people that don't have that kind of automated system. They still work off of file cabinets. They still work off of spreadsheets. We think about in terms of HR or business in general, the vast majority of people in this country are employed by small businesses. Typically, you know, companies under 200 and many, many companies under 50 employees. Most people don't have all of that automation. Those people don't have all of that technology that, you know, you can go and you can pick up Sherm magazine, or you can pick up an Inc. magazine, or you can pick up the Wired magazine and read about technology that these companies are using. And there's still a lot of people out there that aren't doing that. And in fact, if you look at it that way, then that means a lot of the employees that we have covered in the United States are not covered by the technology that many of us assume exists. So technology is a big divide between big and small. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't small companies out there that aren't using technology. There are, and some of them are doing a very, very good job of it. That's one way I see the state of HR. Another area that I see as far as a divide in the state of HR is in the educational level or professionalism level of people who are human resources professionals. There are many people, you know, Sherm and prior to Sherm, HRCI, or in conjunction with HRCI, are certifying people to be professionals. That's still not, it's not the vast majority. It's still not the majority of people who are doing HR that are certified. So you have a lot of people who are performing the HR function that are using techniques or working off of a lack of information that you don't get if you are in, you know, you have one of those certifications. I was thinking about this a little bit earlier this morning in preparation for this this podcast, and I teach the certification classes. I have for 18 years. A lot of those people that come into those classes, while being very smart, they don't have a really good foundation in human resources. They know human resources as it's done in their company, but they don't know human resources as a profession. So many of them struggle with getting that certification because they don't have the broader foundation of education. But at the same time, they work in places where there is no demand for that. They work for a small company with a president that doesn't think that HR is all that important, where you go through and they promote people who had been secretaries and put them in the HR positions, or they take a payroll clerk and they make them the HR manager, or you get somebody who was an accountant who then transitions to human resources, and, you know, great for them, but from the profession standpoint, it doesn't particularly help. To, you know, there's always been that big controversy, and Bruce, I'm sure you've read them too, where you get all these articles about where people are bemoaning the state of HR and how bad it is, and people want to avoid going to the HR department, and, you know, and
mm-hmm. Yep.
Part of that is the fact that there is no demand for, in many of those companies, for that educated human resources person. Everybody thinks that in those situations. You know, the president of the company may think that HR is nothing but a record-keeping function. And as a result of that, I see a big divide in the clients that I call on where half of my clients are the accounting managers for their particular company. Well, that's not necessarily a background well-suited to be a human resources manager. And, so I think there's still a big divide in the profession. That is divided along the lines of size of company, but it's also divided along the importance that the CEO places on human resources. And I think what we're starting to see is a change in that, but I still think there's a big divide right there. So that's sort of a rambling take on what I see as the state of HR today, and one of the reasons that I write the stuff that I write and do the consulting that I do.
So that was great, and it actually prompted a couple questions for me. So my first one is, do you think certifications will be a thing of the past?
No, actually, I think we're seeing more and more demand for certification to show that that somebody does have at least a foundation in HR before you put them in the job. Now, the problem with that is you can't get the certification without having experience, and you can't get the experience without having a certification. It's sort of a catch-22 there. It's, you know, I get that question all the time from people who want to get into HR, and they go, well, how do I get into HR? Because every time I go and apply for a job, they want me to have experience in HR, but I can't get experience in HR if nobody's going to be willing to give me that experience. So it is, that's somewhat of a conundrum that we have to deal with. It is, I think we do need to be encouraging people to get that certification just because it helps them professionally. It helps the company professionally, but certification, no certification, the primary thing is that people are doing the blocking and tackling of the job, and that's important. One of the other divides I wanted to talk about is there's a big divide between people who are doing talent acquisition and those people who are doing employee relations or compliance. The people who do exclusively talent acquisition think that those of us that do employee compliance are not necessary, that lawyers can do that kind of stuff. And that's, to me, that's totally wrong in that you can't have a lawyer that's in your place of business every day watching the interactions between supervisors and employees. And that's where the feet meet the street. That is where companies get in trouble. That's the whole foundation of the EEOC and the Fair Labor Standards Act is the actions of those supervisors. And if you don't have somebody there that is watching that and dealing with that and correcting that on a daily basis, companies are going to be spending a lot of money and be in a lot of trouble. It's not just a matter of finding the right employee. It's making sure that right employee is being guided appropriately through their career. And so I think both areas are necessary. And I've had this discussion a number of times with people that it's, for the day-to-day practitioner, you can't just be a recruiter. You've got to be somebody who is watching the interactions and helping those interactions occur correctly.
Speaking of talent acquisition and recruiters, for the future, do you think there's a possibility for that function to move under marketing? And the reason why I ask is because the more the company brand becomes important for employee or possible candidates to understand, to embrace in regards to thinking about whether they should work at that company or not, it almost seems like a marketing function. So for instance, I was talking to some people the other day in recruiting, and they were telling me that in the interviews now, people are asking about corporate social responsibility. And is the company treating its employees fairly? And what's the diversity in the company? And all of these things that companies try to promote, mm-hmm. but HR doesn't necessarily have a marketing background. And it's not really a marketing function, although it markets job opportunities. So with that divide that you were talking about, since we're talking about the future, do you think it's a possibility that marketing could basically be the umbrella for marketing everything for the company, including job opportunities?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I don't know how quickly we might get to that. What I tell my students and what I've written about a couple times is, as a human resources professional in your business, you need to have two other people probably three other people who are in particular your best friends in the business. One of them is you need to be on very good terms with your IT people so that you have your technology person.
Yeah.
You need to be on very good terms with the finance person because, you know, HR is much more of a driven number is driven by numbers. And in business, that number is profitability. You need to be able to tie what you're doing in HR to the profit that the company is making. And the third person that you need to be very good friends with, that you need to go and have lunch with them at least once a week, is your marketing person. Because of what you just said, it is important for HR to be in the marketing business. We do have to be good storytellers. We do have to be able to tell the story. We do have to be able to answer the questions about corporate social responsibility, because that's a big deal today. That's a big deal for up and coming applicants who are, you know, entering into the first their first job. But it always has been, to be honest with you, is, you know, we make that distinction, say millennials are interested in all of this stuff. And, you know, they're looking for a company that's doing good work. They're looking for a company that is being socially responsible. They're looking for a company that will teach them. They're looking for a company that will reward them. Well, I wrote a blog post probably about a year ago now, I guess, that said I was a millennial in the 70s and the 80s, because when I went out for my first job, that's what I was looking for. I wanted a company that had a good reputation. I had wanted a company that was doing some good social stuff. I wanted a company that was going to foster me and reward me. And I, you know, was willing to leave that company if it didn't give me those kinds of backgrounds. So I think, you know, why we today say that's a millennial trait, in reality, I think it's been a trait for generations. People, you know, time frames have changed on it a little bit, but, you know, so it is getting back to, you know, the importance of HR. Today we're talking about the importance of the employee experience. And I think that is all part of that marketing effort. It is what we're helping people understand that they can do when they come to work for us, the opportunities that we offer them. So I'm not quite sure that marketing should take over that. Marketing should certainly be heavily involved with HR to help craft the story, to make sure that the brand that is being put out by the HR story, it matches the brand of the company. You get very different impressions people have of your company if those brands don't match. You know, if you've got a company, a software company that is known for speed, you know, they're bragging about the fact that they can help a customer process something on a much more quick basis than what they've done in the past. And so you get somebody who sees that ad out there and goes, wow, I want to go to work for them. And then they go into the interview process with your company, and it takes, you know, 15 weeks before they get through the process. those are mismatches of messages, and HR needs to make sure that whatever the brand is of the company that's being put out, that that's the brand that they're putting out about the people. And one of the best ways to do that is you team up with the marketing department. Marketing has to be convinced that they need to have a role in how the message of the company is being put out, but I don't know necessarily think that should be that HR or recruiting should be their sole domain. I think it should be a team effort.
Got it. So in the beginning of the interview, you were breaking down how you see HR today in regards to different divides. Divides around technology, divides around certification, divides around large companies versus small companies. And anytime I think of divides, for me, I always think about cars. And I think about how we're pushing for self-driving cars. We're already testing them. But at the same time, people are driving cars from the 80s and early in 90s. So, And I think about how long it would take for everyone to have a self-driving car, if that would to ever happen. And what are the implications of having both of those on the road at the same time? So with that parallel in mind, I'm curious, do you think that there could be any serious negative implications on so many people being stuck in the past, still using quote-unquote typewriters, pen and paper, and file cabinets, but at the same time, other HR professionals in companies using things like artificial intelligence, bots, advanced analytics, and a lot of futurist types of technology?
Yeah, I do. I think what we could potentially end up with are different classes of workers as a result of that. You've got a company that, you know, a worker that works for a company that uses artificial intelligence and a lot of automation in their process. And then you have the other company that's still, when you need to go on vacation, you have to, you know, fill out a paper form to put your request in for vacation. And I think that what may end up happening is we're going to see in our population, two different divisions of workers and the experiences that they're having in the workplace. Now, that isn't, you know, and that's not necessarily even, you know, we're talking about size, but that's, it's also the adaptation and use of technology. You can have small companies that heavily use technology and small companies that don't. And I'm picturing some of my clients in my mind as far as that technology is concerned. So I've seen both, you know, it's certainly what we're going to end up with, I think, two populations of workers, ones that are experienced with those companies that have that heavy technology experience with their employer, and then those that don't. And I think what you're going to end up seeing is the maintenance of that division, because the people who are working for the non-technology companies are going to have a hard time transitioning to those companies that have a heavy use of technology. And how do you deal in that workplace? They're not going to have the experience. They're not going to come ready to – they're going to have a harder time changing jobs. They're going to have a harder time changing companies. And as a result of that, I think we're going to end up with two divisions of workers in the population as a result of that. I'm seeing that even in HR people today. You know, I'm such a big social media user. I'm not the world's greatest on it, but I've got a decent following on Twitter. I've got a decent following on Facebook. I've got a decent following on a list of connections on LinkedIn. But I have students in my class that, you know, I just finished a class. I said, how many of you have a Twitter account? And out of a group of, initially 14, I think two, three had Twitter accounts. And it's like, you know, that folks, that's the tool of the future, or at least something like that. The idea of being able to communicate with people that way. I said, how many of you communicate with your employees through text messages? And a few more hands, you know, were raised, but not all of them. So there are a lot of technology tools that are available today that can give you information, give you communication capabilities, can allow you to participate in discussions, get information that a lot of people still aren't using. They're Luddites to an extent, and that they don't want to be aware of that technology. They don't want to use that technology. You know, there's a lot of things that are going to go on in the world of work as far as technology is concerned, and just how we take attendance on people. The fact that, you know, you should have seen the grimaces when I said that there's a time coming where employees can have something implanted in the back of their hand that will be their ID badge, allow them entry into their place of business, which will be all their timekeeping records, will also be a GPS, you know, all the evil kinds of stuff that many people conceive of it, you should see the faces that people give me when they say, oh, will never happen in our place of business. I will never submit to that. Da 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 da. You know, all these, and it's like, folks, it's already happening out there. There, you know, the concept is there. I said, how many of you have a badge that you wear on your being that you have to scan to get into your business? You have to scan to open up your time. You know, your time record is kept that way, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So you're already using that technology. It's just a matter of whether it's external to you or internal to you. How many of you have, you know, cell phones that have GPS in it? We can, you know, people can locate you anytime that they want based upon that GPS that's in your phone. So, you know, we're moving toward that technology, but there's still, you know, for a lot of people, and I think in some cases in the smaller situations, a resistance to that.
As an HR listener, or as an HR professional listening to this episode, and maybe even having some anxiety about this conversation, knowing that they have 1,000 things that they need to do today outside of thinking about how they can protect their jobs and really push their company moving forward, what do I do? as that person, where do I start? How do I start thinking about making sure that my job isn't replaced? Not to say that it could be replaced by a robot, but I would like to get your thoughts about that too. But how do I keep up?
Well, it requires work. It requires that you have to become a voracious reader of a variety of things. You have to pay attention to what's going on. Technology-wise, I ask how many of my students ever read Wired magazine. Most of them have never even heard of it. And I said, well, that's something that every once in a while you need to pick up a Wired magazine, seeing what's happening in technology. You're not going to necessarily get that by reading an HR magazine. So you have to be fairly wide read. You have to also, from your personal job standpoint, do an analysis on your job. What is it that makes your job unique? What is it that makes you unique in your job? What are the things that you bring as a person versus you bring as a machine? And from a human resources standpoint, and jumping ahead a little bit to your question about can you be replaced by a robot, the one thing that robots are still not very good at doing, artificial intelligence is still not very good at doing, is putting the people skills in there, the interaction skills. If you're in a job that is routine and rote, you're going to be replaced fairly quickly. And Bruce, from the standpoint of replacing you as a podcaster, artificial intelligence can ask those questions and conduct these interviews as well as you can. So there's got to be something that you're going to take a look at that is a uniqueness about you that somebody is not going to be able to replicate. And you need to do that for yourself. But if you're a human resources manager, you need to think about the various jobs in your company, which of them are likely to be replaced and which of them are not. And if those are not, what is it that makes them unique? What is that people characteristic that you need to bring to the table that, if you're trying to teach people, to be less replaceable, you need to emphasize to them the unique human characteristics that they have in their job. If you're nothing but a file clerk, you're going to be out of luck. There's no humanness that you really can bring to the job of being a file clerk. If you're a human resources person and you're doing nothing but those kinds of transactions, you're going to be very easily replaced. But what the artificial intelligence can't do is sit down and have the conversation with the manager, with the employee, with the applicant, whatever, and understand the emotional aspects of that particular situation. If you're trying to settle an argument between two employees, artificial intelligence is not going to be able to understand how that argument got started. What's the emotional basis of that argument? Those are the kinds of unique characteristics that people bring to the table we're going to be able to stave off, if you will, the robot that's going to come in and take our job because they do not have that kind of emotional basis. We've done a lot of work with artificial intelligence, but it's still not very emotional. And that's what makes us uniquely human is the emotion that's tied up into the relationships that we have with other people.
Now, based off of all of the crazy things that are happening in society regarding gender wage inequality, lack of diversity, sexual harassment, Me Too, a lot of inappropriate things happening in the workplace now, I would think that logic would have the answer to be yes, that HR should be looked at as a very important and strategic role to keep these things happening. But we all know that a lot of people don't use logic to guide their actions or their thoughts. So with you writing about this all the time and speaking and really being at the heartbeat of the industry, I'm curious to know if you believe that a lot of these things have made HR become more important. Do you believe that a lot of people have woke up and in the future HR will really be that strategic partner and important function, or at least viewed as that very important function by the CEO and everybody else around to make sure that these things don't happen again in the future?
I think HR is going to play a tremendous role in that. People start to need to start realizing the importance of HR. You know, we have been saying for years, the old trite phrase, our most important asset is our people that work for us. But we don't, you know, they don't live it. They don't believe it. They don't recognize that. It is, you know, in fact, there's accounting is still having a hard time keeping up with that concept. But as businesses have transitioned from making things to providing services, you know, at least here in the United States economy, it's become very important. And people, you know, still say our most important asset is our people. And we need to recognize that. And you need to also realize that people are fallible. People will make mistakes. They all come from different backgrounds. We're not one homogeneous society. So there are different views on religion. There are different views on, sexual harassment. There are different views on dating. There are different views. And you need to have somebody there in the organization that's going to help understand those issues. I started following somebody, and this is just a side note. I started following somebody on Twitter the other day who is a cultural anthropologist. And she is not working for a university. She's not necessarily a professor. She's working for a company. She's helping this company understand from an anthropology standpoint, from the people standpoint, what their foundations were, what is important to them at the moment, and helping guide them into the future of putting together the various cultures that they have within that organization. And I thought that was very interesting. So I think what we're going to see is potentially an expansion of HR roles to include things like anthropology, to include things like people who have specifically the title of ethicist, you know, somebody who's, you know, helping guide the organization through its ethical decisions. Now, we already in HR somewhat have that role, but we don't have anybody that has that title. And I think we're going to end up seeing some new jobs that come out about this. One of the ones that I did write about as we get into technology and we start getting robots into the workplace and they become more human is who's going to make sure that the robots are being treated appropriately. So there's going to be, you know, rather than seeing robots as slave labor, you know, as we make them more intelligent, are we going to get back into the same kind of situation that we had, you know, in past centuries where people were treated as slaves and not seen as being intelligent beings? You know, in the future, we may have a whole new class of automated people that you have to have somebody in the business that is making sure that they're being treated appropriately. So it's just, that's probably a few years off before we get to that point. But it's something that we need to think about now is as we are changing work, and as we're changing the nature of the worker, we need to not exclude how those workers, be they, you know, human workers or be they automated workers, how those workers work together and then how they're treated in that situation. That's an off in the future kind of job title, but it's something that we need to start thinking about today, because what happens if in 10 years we have a very intelligent robot that is working side by side with our other workers? Should we allow our other workers to abuse that robot worker because it's, you know, not a feeling entity? Or do we need to control how workers treat that fellow worker? So it's just kind of off the wall kind of thought processes that I get into and write about every once in a while.
That's a really interesting point. And I remember reading an article a couple months ago about, you know, there were a couple of people discussing, should robots be taxed and should there be payroll tax on robots that are being counted as employees, which I thought was really interesting. So I wonder if you had any thoughts around how that should work or any other articles that you thought that may provide a little bit more context around this. Because you're right, thinking about how we're going to treat robots across the board is something that we're going to have to think about.
I hadn't really thought about the term of taxing workers, and I don't think I've seen anything on that either. But one of the things that I have seen on written about is income replacement for workers that have been displaced by robots. And one of the ways we might be able to provide that income is by a system of taxes for robot workers, so that a company, if they're replacing workers with robots, that there is an income tax, if you want to put it that way, on that robot workers that then goes into a general fund that provides relief for workers who have been displaced by those workers. So that's an interesting thought. There are a number of people out there that are talking about how do we deal with the unemployment that comes about as a result of people being displaced by workers. And one of the thoughts is that each company needs to put money into a pot. The government needs to put money into a pot. And from that, it's sort of nobody's using the term welfare, but it's basically a welfare system that is, you know, those displaced workers will then be able to get some living income from to be able to sustain them in society. So, I mean, there are going to be a lot of issues, and there are a lot of people that are running scared of robot workers. Stephen Hawking was not too thrilled about artificial intelligence. Elon Musk is not too thrilled about artificial intelligence. Kind of amuses me a little bit given how advanced his technology is, but yeah. So
right, a little ironic.
You know, I don't know have you seen the movie the second Blade Runner that was out, or did you ever see the first Blade Runner?
I have not.
Both the Blade Runners are very dystopian pictures of the future. You know, everybody is crowded. It's the pollution is horrible. People are walking around in the streets. They all look like everybody's homeless. You know, it's a very bleak picture of what the future is. And of course, you get that with, you know, the Terminator, and you get that with dystopian, bleak movies make for better stories than happy, you know, happy outcome. But I'm not a big believer in that dismal future. I think, I am one of those believers that basically says, as we replace work with automation, we're going to find other work for people. Now, there's going to be a lag period in there probably, and there will be periods, you know, it may not work for you as the individual. If you've been replaced by a robot, it may be difficult. It may be 3, 4, 5 years before another job comes along that you feel that you're going to be qualified for. So you as an individual, there may be difficult times, but I think as society as a whole, there, you know, it's not going to be as bleak as what many of these movies. So I'm more optimistic about the future. I think technology is going to create as many jobs as it displaces. They're just going to be different. And what's going to be required, and this is why human resources is also going to be very important, is the fact that we're going to have to do a lot of retraining. People are going to have to be trained a different skill set, a different way of thinking, a different way of doing something that goes along and plugs in with that technology and that's one of the things we fall down on today. You know, we spend a tremendous amount of money on training, but we don't spend enough money on training. Today, companies will displace workers, replace them with technology, and in fact, I saw that here in Georgia a couple of years. Well, during the recession, companies were shutting down. They were laying their workers off. They were retooling their plants, bringing in equipment that needed to have a higher level of education to be able to run that piece of machinery. And then when they opened their doors up, they started hiring people, and they were not bringing back in their old workers. They were looking for people who had different skill sets. And I'm thinking that's wrong-minded. What they should have been doing during that layoff was taking those workers that they had who had been loyal to them, that they already knew them, and training them how to use that new equipment so that when they opened the doors, they had a, you know, an employee population that was prepared to go. And I think we need to, as human resources professionals, we need to do more with our management teams and helping them understand of the importance of training and training to prepare for those future jobs, training people on how to be versatile, training people on how to be adaptive, training people on how to be, able to problem solve, those kinds of things, which I don't think we do enough of. So I think HR has a role there that, we can help our companies prepare for the future by helping employees prepare for the future, getting our employees prepared to take on new roles as their role is replaced by artificial intelligence.
That was great. And my next question was actually going to be, what do you think about HR trying to hire for jobs that haven't been created yet? I was actually at a conference a couple months ago, and I forget the exact stat, but I think they said something similar to by the year 2030, when a lot of kids who are in elementary school will be entering the workforce, 30 to 40% of the jobs that will exist did not exist today. And it was an interesting question around how does HR even know how to hire for these roles if they don't even understand what the roles are? So a lot of what you just said was pretty interesting and, you know, related to that.
Yeah, you can't teach somebody a specific skill if that's, you know, the necessity of that skill doesn't even exist yet.
Right.
But what you can do is you can prepare people on how to think better. You can prepare people on how to problem solve better. You can prepare people on how to be more versatile and adaptive. You can prepare people for those human qualities right there that are going to be necessary to do those jobs. You know, you're not going to be able to say you're going to have to be trained on putting this widget into that machine because we don't know if that's even going to exist. But you can prepare people to be prepared to, you know, solve those problems, deal with those situations, and have the adaptability to move quickly to another situation. So those, you know, the softer skills are what we need to be training people on. And we could use that even today in many of the jobs that people are doing. And we don't. We expect people to come to our workplaces prepared to do the jobs. And, you know, they're woefully unprepared. Schools aren't teaching, you know, that stuff either. So, you know, it would be nice, but I think that's one of the roles that, I think there needs to, and that's the other thing that I think HR can do is work with the business community and understand what the business community's needs are. And by business, I mean, you know, also all sorts of jobs, understanding what people are going to need, you know, helping educational institutions prepare their students by understanding what the needs of the world are going to be. And I think we don't do enough of that with school systems. So that's another role HR could play, is to be advisors to the school systems on what is important for the working person coming out of school. What are they going to have to be prepared to do? And we could work with schools and talk to them about adaptability and versatility and learning and that kind of stuff. So.
Got it. And now we're going to move into a quick lightning round, which I like to call the real, the random, and ridiculous.
Okay.
We're going to ask you a real, a random, and ridiculous question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. So the real question, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I love bread pudding. My mother used to make one that
are best friends.
Had raisins and raisins with a lemon sauce on it. It's just absolutely incredible. Ooh. So.
Lemon sauce.
Oh, yeah.
I am writing that down. I'm a little bit of a bread pudding connoisseur, and I ask every guest about bread pudding. So I'm always getting not only myself hungry during the podcast, but I'm always learning about new recipes and different ways people are making it. So lemon sauce.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Written down. Great. So the random question, we talked about the future a lot, and you've actually already spoke about some of these during the podcast, but what's your favorite movie about the future?
Oh, man. Because most of the ones about the future are the dystopian ones. They're yep. You know, the bleak ones. I would say my favorite one has actually been, and I can stop and watch it anytime, is The Terminator.
Ah, which one?
The first one.
Got it. Okay. That's a classic.
Yes.
And the ridiculous question. I know you talk to a lot of people, or I'm assuming you talk to a lot of people about the future of HR, and there have to be some naysayers that say, Mike, what the hell are you talking about? I know you're talking about the future and all this stuff, but that's so far away. So what my question to you is, what are some of the most ridiculous things that you've heard from HR professionals who are not even worried about any of this? Like, you know what? I have way too much going on, or this is what never happened. Has that happened?
Yeah, I actually get that a fair amount in talking to people and making presentations at various conferences where people go, you know, that's not going to happen. That's just not the way it's going to be. And you know, those people are convinced, and there's really not too much you can do to unconvince them that, you know, I just point out, it's just, hey, look at the world you work in right now. Look at that business that you're in right now. Has it changed in the last 10 years?
Right.
You know, the answer is typically yes. And I say, well, what's changed? And typically they start saying, well, the technology has changed. You know, even if you're an old-time manufacturing plant, you're not using the same machinery typically that was used 50 years ago. You've updated that. It's just, I used to work at a place where we had printing presses. And we got to the point where, you know, we could train, you know, guys that had high school educations or even no high school education to run that equipment over a period of years. You know, they did like an apprenticeship type of thing. Well, when we started changing that machinery to statistical process controls, you know, they had to learn math. And one of the things that we had to do to get them to be able to run that equipment that they had been running was we had to give them basic math classes so that they understood what they were going through in programming that piece of machinery. So you get somebody there that says, oh, my job's never going to change. No, that's not true. It's changing all the time, and you're just not recognizing it. So it's just like the example, you know, the importance. I think social media is extremely important today. And if you're a human resources professional, you may not use it necessarily on a day-to-day basis, but you certainly need to be aware of it because you have employees that are using it. I have people that, you know, deny that it even exists. I'm never going to have a Twitter account. I'm never going to have, I'm not going to be on Facebook. I'm not going to be on LinkedIn. And I'm going, fine. You're also not going to be having a job here in the near future. So it's, and I just try to get them to compare what they're doing on a day-to-day basis today as opposed to just even last year. And how's it changed? That shows you that the future is coming.
Well, that's the perfect way to end this episode. Mike, thanks so much for being a guest. Woo!
Thank you, Bruce. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. So where can people find you and Omega HR online?
OmegaHRSolutions.com is my website, and the first page on there is the blog site. It's renewed. You know, there's a new blog post up there every Monday through Friday. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Hopperman, which is HABERMAN. Certainly LinkedIn, look up my name, and you're not going to find too many Hoppermans on there. So you can connect with me in a couple different ways. Probably the best way to do it, though, is to either go to the website and pay attention to what's going on there or Twitter.
Perfect. And we'll put all that info in the show notes. Well, thank you all for listening to this podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Mike really had a lot of great things to say about the future. If you enjoyed this conversation, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you have any questions or thoughts about how we can make this podcast better, please let us know. Also, make sure you download the Employee Cycle Podcast on your favorite podcast player. We're looking forward to seeing you on next week's episode. And you HR leaders out there, remember to continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.